If you have your Bibles this morning, open to Joshua chapter 4. We're going to go back to this Old Testament text and just scan through a few pages of Joshua as we consider what God did for Israel and their future and what God is doing for us in our future right here at Sunset. If there was ever a nation that had a right to be fearful about their future, it had to be Israel. They left Egypt as a group of slaves. They wandered for 40 years in the wilderness. And then they arrived there on the banks of the Jordan River, ready to enter a brand new land. And there were all kinds of obstacles in the way, and yet they held on to the one thing that God had given them as they left Egypt, and that was His promise that He would bless them and prosper them. As we read that story of the conquest of Canaan, there are a series of occurrences that if you were not reading carefully, you might completely overlook. We know the story. We remember about the Battle of Jericho and then on to one city after another. But there are some little occurrences that I want to draw your attention to this morning that we surely cannot forget. The first big event, as they stood there on the banks of the Jordan, was the crossing of the river. It was at flood stage, you remember. And God, through His miraculous intervention, did for them a second time what He had done as they left Egypt. Remember the waters parted there at the Red Sea? They walked across on dry land. And in an effort to remind them of that and demonstrate to them that He had never left them, that He was still there, the same miracle happened again. This time the river wasn't parted. This time it was like an invisible hand reached down into that flooded river and formed a dam. And on one side the river began to build up and the water all ran away. And they again walked across that riverbed and entered for the very first time as a nation the promised land. Now earlier the spies had gone in and they gave a bad report resulting in those 40 years of wandering. But now they cross over as a nation into the promised land. Now, this great event is followed by one of these small occurrences that I want to draw your attention to. Look at Joshua chapter 4, down in verse 19. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and they camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground.'" And then he goes on and describes what had just happened. Stones of remembrance. I don't know how many years they sat there before someone came by and knocked one down and then another, and they eventually were scattered. They're not there now. But for a period of time, those stones served as a marker on the exact spot where Israel crossed over from the east side to the west side of the Jordan River. One of my favorite places, because I'm a Texan, is the Alamo. And if you ever visit the Alamo, you'll see out in front of the Alamo, there's a thin brass strip that has been set into the stones there. And legend has it that Jim Bowie, knowing that all those who defended the Alamo would eventually die at the hands of Santa Anna and his army, gave his men the option. And he drew there on the sand in front of the Alamo a line. He said, "If you want to stand with me, then come over." And almost all of them did. And they stepped across that line knowing that it meant death. Now, here, in this account, everyone who crossed over, it meant for them life. It meant a new life as they entered that land. And so that memorial was there. Now, in chapter 6 and 7, there's the big story. They had the victory at Jericho. Achan sinned by going in and taking some of the treasure from the city of Jericho that God had forbidden. And so they go on to the next battle at Ai. And at Ai, they lose. And we see the mourning of Israel. They didn't understand, but then they learned that there was sin in the camp, and that was the reason for their loss. But if you'll read this carefully, you'll notice that little verse at the end of chapter 7. There in Joshua chapter 7, down in verse 26, we read these words. Over Achan, they heaped up a large pile of rocks, which remains to this day. Then the Lord turned from his fierce anger. Therefore, that place has been called the Valley of Achor ever since. Again, that pile of rocks is no longer there, but at the time of this writing, it was still there. That pile of rocks served as a memorial for the tragedy that occurred at Ai, the loss of life that took place. We do the same thing today. The word Achor means trouble. That was the Valley of Trouble. If you drive just down the road not far from here to Oklahoma City, you'll see that very sobering memorial, a tribute to the loss of life that occurred the day that federal building was bombed. So here they have a memorial to their crossing over, another stone memorial to their loss there at Ai. And then as we move on into chapter 8, they go back again and they fight the battle a second time. And this time God gives them the victory over Ai. And there in chapter 8, down in verses 28 and 29, we read that Joshua burned Ai and made it a permanent heap of ruins, a desolate place to this day. He hung the king of Ai on a tree and left him there until evening. At sunset, Joshua ordered them to take his body down from the tree and throw it down at the entrance of the city gate. And they raised a large pile of rocks over it, which remains to this day. All these memorials are gone now, but for a period of years they were there. And anyone who traveled down that road and asked, what is this? They were told the story of what happened there. And they were caused to remember the events of that day when God gave them the final victory at Ai. And then at the end of chapter 8, we read about the renewal of the covenant. Once they had come into the land and they had won the victories and God had given them homes that they hadn't built and vineyards they hadn't planted, once God had given them all these blessings of this land flowing with milk and honey, they gathered. And again, the words of the law were read aloud in the presence of that entire nation that had crossed over and been given the victory. But Joshua did something else besides just reading the law. He memorialized the occasion by making the very first copy of those Ten Commandments. Now, God had made two copies. One of them Moses broke when he came down and found the people involved in idolatry. So he went back up and got a second copy made in stone with the finger of God. But this is the first account we read of in the Bible where another copy is made of that original Ten Commandments. There in chapter 8, in verse 32, we read what Joshua did. There in the presence of the Israelites, Joshua copied on stones the law of Moses, which he had written. All the people there had that copy. You know, that original Ten Commandments has been copied on stone innumerable times. I've seen them and you've seen them in public places, in front of church buildings, in front of courthouses. The Ten Commandments, they were emblazoned on the walls of most schoolrooms until recent years. So copies have been made throughout the years. And here we read this copy that was made by Joshua for the people. Throughout these opening chapters of Joshua, we find a trail of visible monuments, visible stone monuments, stones of memorial. Now, other memorials were observed. Back in chapter 5 of this, we read that the special sign that was given to the Jews of circumcision, because during those 40 years, circumcision had not taken place. And so all those who left and came across were circumcised. And again, that sign was known among the Jewish people. Also, the Passover was renewed. Apparently, that had fallen into disuse. And so they renewed that. The manna stopped when they came into the land and they began to eat the produce of the land and they began to remember the Passover, that memorial feast. Why all this emphasis on remembering, on looking back? Why do you think the Holy Spirit chose to put these verses in here in the midst of these exciting stories, talking about how they paused and how they remembered? Well, there's a fundamental truth of life. It's in looking backward that we gain true perspective. You can ask any person who's ever ascended a mountain, you've probably experienced this yourself. If you climb up a mountain, all you see is the next ridge, and then the next ridge, and the next ridge. It's only when you pause and turn around and look at the distance from which you came that you really gain perspective. In every life, in every family, in every church, in every nation, there needs to be times when we pause and look back. And when we reflect on how far we've come, and when we stop and remember the good times and the bad times and the struggles and the victories and all that's gone before and how God has brought us to this point. I wish we could view history in a better way than we do. We as Westerners tend to face the future blindly. We look into the future and there's no way we know what's ahead. In many of the African tribal cultures, they describe life as a journey walking backward. And I think that's a more accurate way to look at it. As you move through life backward, no, you can't see the future. That's the way it really is. But you constantly are seeing where you have been and where you have come from. Let me tell you what happens. Anytime we take the time to pause and to look back and to remember, the first thing that happens for every Christian is we are able, with that perspective and looking back, we're able to see God's deliverance of us at times. For generations, those rock cairns that had been placed there, those stone stacks, served as visible reminders of God's deliverance of that nation. In Deuteronomy, there's a verse that's repeated not once, but five times in the book of Deuteronomy. This is what it says. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. If we'll just stop and pause to remember, we did this morning as we shared in the Lord's Supper. Do you ever stop and think about the times that God has delivered you? Have you ever been delivered through a serious illness or through a serious accident? Can you remember some time when God spared you sorrow upon sorrow by bringing someone through that you loved so dearly and you prayed for and you had deliverance given to you? Have you ever been delivered from some satanic attack in your life? Do you have some struggle with sin that God has blessed you through and given you victory over? What bondage have you been freed from? Remember that you were slaves. Not only do we see God's deliverance in our lives, we see God's direction for us when we pause. Deuteronomy 8:2, remember how the Lord led you all the way in the desert these 40 years. I can look back now, and at this age, with greater clarity than ever before in my life, I can see how God has led me through life. I didn't see it when I was in the thick of it, but I can look back now, and I can see how God opened doors and closed doors, and moved us this way, and moved us that, and helped us with this, and helped us with that. And I can see how God has blessed me, and led me, and helped me all the steps of my life. And I think that all of us that are here today are here by divine appointment. It's not an accident. When you trust God, it's never an accident. In Acts chapter 17, in Paul's famous sermon, a favorite text there in Athens, he said, from one man he made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the times set for them and the exact places where they would live. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. Do you see God's direction in your life? I do. And then lastly, when we pause and reflect and look back and remember, we can see how devoted God has been to us through all of these travails of life. Again, in Deuteronomy 32:7, we read, "Remember the days of old. Consider the generations long past." I think of this congregation. It's a different church today than it was when I first stepped through those doors. Many of you look back and remember with fondness and gratitude previous leaders of this congregation and the journey that this church has been through. He says, "Remember the days of old. Consider the generations long past. Ask your father and he will tell you. Your elders, they will explain it to you. When the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, he shielded him and cared for him. He guarded him as the apple of his eye, like an eagle that stirs up its nest and hovers over its young. He fed them with the fruit of the fields. He nourished them with honey from the rock and with oil from the flinty crag, with curds and milk from the herds and the flock. You drank the foaming blood of the grape." He describes God's love and care and provision over his offspring. And for those of us who have eyes to see, we are daily recipients of the tender mercies of God. Do you remember? Do you look back? Every refreshing rainfall that we experience, every delicious meal we sit down to, every sweet night's rest we rise from, don't forget what God has done for you and is doing for you. He has delivered you and he has led you to this place and he is daily caring for you and meeting your needs. We could go back through. We'd have to ask some of the older folks here. There are a few folks who were here back at the very beginning of this congregation. This church was 7 years old before I arrived, but there are some who were here at the very beginning. And you could ask them, and they could give you a list of memorials, significant events that have happened in the history of this congregation. I look today at young lives that were forged in this family. And my heart is filled with pride when I see the leaders that this church has produced for this and subsequent generations. And this morning we celebrated the greatest of all the memorials as we took the bread and took the cup. We looked back at the cross, but we also looked forward until he comes again with anticipation to the future. We're on the threshold of a new year. And Sunset is going to be experiencing some big changes in 2018. And the question I want to ask is will God do any less for this church family as we move forward than he has done already in the past? No. God loves this church, and God will lead this church and guide this church. So I want to just challenge every one of us to step with confidence into this new year, 2018, that's before us, knowing that the God who has always been faithful — we sang that beautiful hymn this morning that Gabe led about his faithfulness — God who has always been faithful will continue to be faithful to lead us all in the days ahead. This is a loving, giving, serving, praying church. And because of that, I can say at this point in the lesson that if you need prayers, there is no church that will be any more ready to pray for you than this congregation today. if you need to respond to the faithful God through His Son Jesus in baptism, we will assist you this morning as you make that decision. If you need to come, won't you stand while we sing at this time?